Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Gods Will Not Save You, The Wire Revisited. I'm Willie.
Hi, my name's Jakob, and this is a podcast where the co-hosts do a deep read into each episode of The Wire.
Anchor.fm/thegodswillnotsaveyou/support if you want to donate anything. We're really appreciative to everybody who has done so far. Yeah, and with that, I guess we could get into talking about season 4, episode 13, final grades.
Yeah, exciting stuff. Our final episode of the season. So, yeah, we got a lot of great stuff here.
Yeah,
to hear from, you know, your perspective about this episode and stuff.
Yours too, man. It's going to be fun. This is the longest episode yet, I think, of the show. So,
yeah, more.
Really had a lot to wrap up.
Yeah, man. All right, let's get started. Like, it's Christmas time. Landsman's not like the happy Santa Claus of the homicide department.
Yeah.
He's, you know, upset with Freeman for uncovering all these bodies so close to the new year. So,
yeah.
And then there's a lot of other stuff going on too, if you want to, whatever you want to talk about here.
Is there a Santa Claus at the homicide department, you think? Like, I can't imagine.
I mean, it looks like it kind of, right? Like, just like angry and angry Santa Claus.
He's got those rosy cheeks. He's got the Christmas tie. But yeah, Bubs is, you know, in the midst of all that, we're seeing Landsman act kind of like an asshole for getting grouchy about the clearance rate and all that. And he seems kind of like unwavering in that. But just around the corner for him in his life is Bubs confessing pretty painfully to a murder he did to Sherrod.
Yeah.
And it kind of like the sequence of events kind of turns his perspective on it a little bit. It's finally, you know, it's fucked up. Bubs has to like literally hit rock bottom before he can get like the proper kind of respect that he's been so deserving of this whole time.
Yeah. And you said murder, but is it like, I mean, it's like manslaughter, like, it's like inadvertent, right? But he would have got charged for it.
I feel like in Bubs's mind at this moment, he's like feeling so like guilt ridden that he perceives it as a murder.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, they probably would have done like gotten the stat, right?
Yeah.
Because it's Norris. So it's like.
I know.
Not shady.
Oh, man.
He's like getting in shots. You know, do you think him and Simon are like, oh, yeah, let's like take shots at our ex-wives or something? Like, man, it's like this is like costing me more than bleeding me more than her lawyer.
Yeah, you're talking about when he's frustrated with the vending machine that has Utz chips.
Oh, there you go. Nice plug.
Nice. But it's funny that, like we've developed like a different kind of friendship, like over the past year and a half, like doing this. So like I've learned to I've come to learn how like,
okay. Yeah, we're friendly.
I've come to learn how uniquely you hate Ed Norris just like have problems with you know.
Yeah, just little things. I don't like hate him, but it's just annoying. So
it's funny because I was watching the Democracy Now interview with David Simon where he's like talking about Show Me a Hero. And that was like coming out at the time of like the 2016 election. So she was like asking him questions about Martin O'Malley. And he said like, you know, for like the first year or so, maybe I was like actually pretty impressed with him because he had a really good police commissioner, Eddie Norris.
Yeah, he loves Ed Norris, man.
Yeah.
Or Eddie. Yeah.
So
the more you know.
The rare, little right rift in our parasocial relationship with David Simon.
Yeah. Oh, we love you, man. But, you know, for me, it's just Eddie and the Geo stuff sometimes.
No, that's.
But anyways, yeah, I mean, back to Landsman and Bubbles.
Yeah.
So he gets puked on. And he doesn't have an extra shirt in his desk, which is like, ooh, man.
Yeah, that's rough. It's pretty like awful just to think that like he considered himself clean because he just went to the bathroom and like wiped all the like vomit off of him with like a damp paper towel or something, and he's like, "Oh, job's done." Like,
yeah, kind of like, is this just like a Savage Landsman moment where he's just like, "Oh, I'm this big kind of like, you know, eating big old nasty subs and greasy stuff and pouring mags, and I just like, I'm, eh." Like, what's that joke everyone uses about toilet paper? Like, I mean, if you're in your J's and you step on some dog poo, you know, are you gonna, you know, are you gonna use water or are you gonna use toilet paper? So now, anyone who thinks like the Muslim world's backwards for, you know, washing their like behind after, you know,
yeah,
taking, you know, having a bowel movement,
yeah,
you're the savage, you know. Like, yeah. Bidets are the best. So it's like, Lan's been doing the paper towel on the shirt that needs, like, he's just washing his shirt as yeah. he wears it. Ooh.
It's pretty gross. I mean, I've been kind of, like, thinking for a while that bidets are the way to go, really.
Yeah. Like, why not?
I think it's a lot more efficient. But anyway, back to, it's getting pretty chaotic, like, Bubbles pukes all over Landsman. He tries to hang himself. The graffiti on the bathroom walls kind of speaks for itself.
Oh, yeah.
Rawl sucks cock. Call McNulty for a good time. Like,
oh, man.
Pretty good summation of, like, all the chaotic stuff that's been going on in this department these last 4 years.
Yeah.
On that bathroom wall. but it's like,
yeah, stall.
It's like, pretty crazy that like Landsman just a few scenes ago was talking rather coarsely about maintaining a good clearance rate.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has like a moment of conscience when he, decides to throw Bubbles back
yeah.
and like put him into rehab or whatever.
Based Landsman.
Yeah, right? He's not sitting on the fence in any situation. He's going full bore. But when Kima goes to drop Bubbles' sponsor, is like Waylon his sponsor?
Yeah, the guitar player. I was like, wait, she found like a busker and brought him to Bubbles with Waylon. I know I've been like losing steam lately, but damn, I really missed a lot this episode. But you mean Steve Earle?
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, get some.
But obviously like a pretty like horrific moment with Bubbles just kind of collapsing in Waylon's arms and like crying a lot. And we get this like look on Kima when she's like looking at him, maybe kind of like feeling maybe guilty that she could never help him out. Like, I swear to God, like all the cops should come to like a reckoning of some sorts for the way they kind of just exploited Bubbles' labor to have Jay Landsman
yeah.
be the like person like who actually does something to save his life.
That's a great point. Yeah, I mean, it is pretty sad that he literally... Yeah, I mean, cuts him down. Or Ed Norris saves his life, too.
Yeah.
Damn, dude. Oh.
I mean, I'm sure he would have not been disappointed with that statistic in his favor if they decided to lock Bubbles up, though.
Oh, no, hell no. Yeah. But, I mean, you know, they, yeah, like, saved his life that way, literally, and, like, he's, yeah, multiple ways by getting him into an actual rehab and...
Yeah.
Like deward at Bayview, which sounds pretty ominous.
What did Waylon say? He's like, he's sober. He's more sober. Or he was just like, he's sober as a motherfucker right now.
Oh.
All right. Kind of crazy. Like, I feel like it's kind of like a.
What are you saying? You say sober as a motherfucker. Jesus. You look jealous. I was like, oh shit, what is he gonna say? You sober.
It's kind of like a strength of David Simon in general to just like put you in those like sticky moral situations, because I remember watching like one of the okay, like spoiler alert for...
Hey, no spoil boys on this podcast.
Spoiler alert for The Deuce, but I don't know if you remember that character, Lori, the porn star that like ended up killing herself.
Yeah, I remember. Pretty bit, like minor storyline.
But like, I remember the director talking about, or the director of the episode was like, I wanted to like put you in her shoes where it seemed like everybody was kind of exploiting her to some degree and like they could have done something to save her. And I wanted like the viewer to like feel like conflicted about that, that like in every way someone was like taking advantage of her, even if they had good intentions. So it's like David Simon, human life matters less every day in all of his work.
Yeah. Hey man, brilliant comparison. We got crossovers for crossovers.
Let's see. We're talking about police setting up their intake center.
Yeah. What do you want to talk about now? Sorry.
So let's talk about the bodies coming into Daniels's alma mater, I guess.
Like that's his his high school.
Didn't he say like I went here? Like that's the reason why we could like use this is because I went to school here.
That's the real reason. Is I don't know if this is the right school, but Dookie's like something smells like weird here at this high school. I'm pulling up to like there's bodies in the gym.
No, didn't Daniel say it was like LaMille or something?
Oh, okay. I don't know, man. Dookie. Gotta look it up. Thank you, man. That's some good geo. I'm sleeping, man.
It's for my maps. It's in the maps.
Yeah. we'll save everyone the geo.
So they're trying to kind of get some wind in their sails with this whole like mass murder investigation, and McNulty snooping around, kind of making it uncomfortable for Rhonda because, you know, they had their things, and he's asking her favors about Bodhi because he's approaching it from his McNulty-like angle. But what do you make of like it's pretty funny like how it's almost like The Wire is obviously like a very serious hard-hitting thematically rich show. But the way they pace out some of their like more comedic scenes is straight out of like a sitcom sometimes.
Yeah.
Like when McNulty's like quizzing them all on like, oh, well, did you vacuum up this and did you get this? And like Bunk and Freeman are like, McNulty, come on.
Yeah. What's the geo? But that's different. Yeah. I mean, are you asking what I think about that? I don't know. Lily, what do you mean? I don't know. It's funny stuff. What can I say? Bunk's still like just, you know, it's like his, normal, like more squared people like me, like regular office jobs, just have like, oh, fantasy football, or like, come on, like, and if I could ever get in shape, like I'll school you in some hoops. And then Bunk's just like, his fantasy football league is just murder and like mass murders and murder investigations. Like, oh, did Eddie Crane get dissolved into a tub down there? Like, what's the over under on these amount of murders?
You know? He said 23. Right?
Yeah. That's insane.
Yeah. Pretty, it's like David Simon said something pretty interesting. He's like, the way they decorated Christmas in The Homicide, like while I was like covering them, is they would have like a little Christmas tree, but the ornaments would be like pictures of like dead gang members or like drug dealers that the cops were going after. So pretty desensitized sense of humor they have there.
And I remember one of them was good there.
Yes.
One of them was Abraham Partlow. I always wonder if that's like Chris's like part of Chris's name, because he was like a stick up guy or some tough guy. And then I found, and like this is kind of off topic, but what is off topic in the simulation? I found randomly, like I was trying to figure out who this Abraham Partlow is they reference. I just only found like a couple names from Baltimore. One of them like way like before, I don't know if it could have been him, but he was like a wrestler in high school, this kid named Abraham Partlow. And I'm like, damn, Banga Akinabe. Like he always tests, like his testament to wrestling is like, oh, it's helped, like, save my life, you know? Like, wow. I got a scholarship to go wrestle at Bucknell, and I'm like, dude, what if, like, wrestling, Partlo, Banga, yeah. Whoa.
Yeah, the time-lapse continuum is falling in on itself. It's all, nothing is real. We're all batteries. It's all like, yeah, everything. But anyway, so...
We're all bad. Well, I want to be a pro cell.
Isn't that the Matrix? Like, the plot of it is like... Oh,
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I'm too stupid.
No, it's fine. But yeah, I know I talked some negative things about Kima earlier about her being kind of like, you know, she should have done more.
Yeah, I did a little bit of trashing on the Kima. I was like, wait, when was this? Oh, literally right now.
Like, she could have done more to help. But when we see her searching Chris and Snoop's car, like, she's the only one to be able to find the gun. Like, after, you know, Herc initially searched it. Okay, no surprise there. But Freeman couldn't even get it, like, bunked.
Yeah.
Like, she's the one. It's a callback to the first episode where she's the one to find two guns.
Two guns.
That's right.
Yeah, pretty genius, like, apparatus they have, but no, yeah. You know, no match for Kima. A little boomerish on Lester there.
Yeah,
he's like, you never been to Vietnam? We got, like, give me a piece of string and we'll do some paces.
That's funny.
I bet you Prez set up all the, like, he probably hooked up all the, like, HDMI cables and stuff, like, in their little office. Not Lester, or maybe not.
Yeah Lester, I mean, that's a GMC Denali they're driving.
Oh, yeah, the Denali, the Yukon XL.
But I have one of those things above my glove compartment too. It's not like electronic, but it just like opens by itself. So like, ooh. Now when I watch this show, I'm like, this is a little dated because I have one of those things in my car. I don't hide guns in there though.
You don't need to hide it, dude. Yeah. If you're a legal carrier.
We're the gun guys on this podcast.
Yeah, lots of stuff, man. Oh, shit.
But did you appreciate that little Gary Daddario or Daddario cameo?
I'm just learning about it, so do tell.
The, you know, yeah. Former police commander that is a character in Homicide, plays the grand jury prosecutor when they bring Chris and Snoop in. A little bit of trivia there for you.
Thank you. Yeah, he was like one of the lieutenants in the book, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, okay, so just like one more scene of the cop stuff before we move on. Like,
oh, cop stuff.
The whole conversation with McNulty and Daniels, where McNulty is making the decision to... rejoin the major crimes unit.
Yeah,
they do like the whole thing where they like swap the dialogue where McNulty is like, oh, let's just do it fast and clean and simple, and Daniels is like, no, we do a Title III blah blah blah, or we don't do it at all. Another like sitcom like little callback, like cute thing. They're both like smiling at each other.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We got our own little sitcom here. Yay, Willie.
Anyway. Maybe we can move on to Prop Jomar now.
All right, yeah, man. What's up with that, man? A lot of kind of confusing stuff for me. Like deals with the Greeks and Marlo, Omar, Prop Joe, cheese. But
yeah.
So Prop Joe doesn't want to give up cheese, you know?
Yeah, because
the co-op's like kind of leaning on him or...
Yeah, it's my nephew.
Okay.
My sister's boy.
Yeah, yeah. So tell us, like, what's ironic about that or not?
Because I think later on in season 5, Cheese is the one that gives up a prop Joe to Marlowe.
Man.
And it's like pretty fucked up because, you know, he's taken care of. He took care of him in a nasty situation from the get-go. Yeah, pretty traitorous shit there that's going on with Method Man.
Yeah, he's got some funny lines, though. Like, yeah. When Omar comes back, he says he's going to, like, do this and that to him. It reminded me, is that like a Wu-Tang interlude or something?
Yeah.
Like, right. Torture.
Yeah.
He used to play for me. I'd be like, damn, Willie's like crazy, man. No wonder he hangs out with Spirit so much. No, I'm just...
It's Spirit. The Halloween Superstore?
Yeah.
But yeah, he tells him he's going to get all diabolical on him. Some pretty Method Man-esque stuff. But yeah, this episode fits in so much. Like, this is like the first season 2 callback we've had like since we left the docks. They needed that extra like 20 minutes of the episode to like get some good Greek stuff in.
Damn, sick Greek burn there.
Oh, what? No.
I'm... Oh, that wasn't sarcastic. Like, they needed 20 extra minutes to get that Greek stuff in there.
I'm saying I'm glad we get the 20 extra minutes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's always good to see the old Vondas.
Yeah.
But what's going, like, so they're kind of, is this proving that the guy who was saying amateurs after the robbery was part of the Greeks? Because I was like, no, that's Sergei's people. Like,
I mean, yeah, maybe. Like,
yeah,
that's the most logical connection I can come up with in my head. But
so what's going, it's like a power play by Marlowe to just kind of like, you know, bypass the co-op or what? Like, explain it
but
to me a little more.
But Proposition Joe is organizing the deal with the Greeks, right?
Yeah, yeah. But or like,
they're not, he's not actually Greek, but yeah.
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 But so Marlo's like vetting the Greeks, kind of.
Yeah, he's getting Chris and Monk to trail him.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's another thing, like Proposition Joe sets that connection up with Marlowe, and then doesn't Marlowe then later on arrange like a blessing from the Greeks to kill Proposition Joe?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't remember that far ahead.
I think that comes into play, and it just goes to show you that Proposition Joe, even when he is like trying to do right by his people, gets stabbed in the back. Except by Slim Charles.
Yeah. Damn. Like
the only loyal one.
Yep.
Man, Robert.
That's for Joe.
Robert Chu also taught those kids, too. He's an on-set acting coach. How dare they?
Yeah, man. Tough stuff. Yeah, man. So, I mean, Omar's doing his thing. Like, doesn't want to be a dope dealer. So, kind of just wholesaling it back to Joe.
Yeah.
And leaving the stuff at 2249 Polk Street.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know.
Okay.
It's just an address, I think, in Coldstream Homestead Montebello, but I don't know if it, like, you know, like, there could have been whatever garage there, but what do I know? It's for the map. But yeah, I mean, what do you think about, like, Omar and the way they're setting up this kind of triumphant departure?
Yeah, it's it's overconfident for sure.
Yeah, right. It's like, you know, there's no way they're going to be able to track this back to like the few loved ones I still have in the city. And...
yeah. There's no way they're going to harm a blind man. Like, fuck, dude.
Yeah.
But, so he sells all the drugs back to Proposition Joe for 20 on the dollar. But then Marlo was saying that Joe said that Omar was doing it for 30 on the dollar. So Joe is like, okay, so he might have like looked out for Marlo in one instance, but in this instance, he's like actively deceiving him, right? Like,
yeah, I guess. Yeah. So, you know, it's always got like, you know, there's a cost doing business.
Yeah.
I mean, my experience and stuff. No. As a businessman, as a former Greek guy.
Yeah. So, yeah, not every time somebody gets overconfident in the Wire universe, it's not going to end up good for them.
Nope.
But Cuddy is taking a blow to his confidence right now because a nurse is hurling insults at him as a rationale for why he doesn't have insurance and he can't be watching HBO's Deadwood.
Yeah.
I've never watched the show. I've never finished the show completely.
Deadwood?
Yeah. I know.
You never finished Deadwood? No. I thought that was like one of your favorite shows.
I never finished it though. I know David Simon is a huge fan of it, but I never got around to it.
Is that why he likes Letterkenny so much too? That's like about the, it's very like
specific, regional,
like language, like
location, like hyper specific and like unique. I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, but back to the nurse and Cuddy, I mean, yeah, it couldn't just be that we have like a broken healthcare system. It's the fact that he's not like grinding hard enough in the like straight world and he must be a gangbanger. Because he got stabbed. It's like you got shot 25 years ago and stabbed once too. Yeah. You're a gang member. It's like, it's
fucked up.
I mean, stuff happens. You know?
And then she snitches on him too, or she tries to a bunny.
Yeah. God, man.
But so I know people like to rag on like a few things in season 5 for it being like melodramatic or it seems like it jumps the shark or whatever. And then David Simon always debunks it like, no, these are, you know, actual real life incidents. And this was one of the things where I was like, okay, come on. This is laying it on a little thick with the nurse berating Cuddy. But then lo and behold, David Simon said like, I actually like saw this happen at Johns Hopkins with a nurse like saying this to somebody. And I'm like, oh.
But okay. It was never about race. Like it's about class, right? With Cuddy. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
It's like she's seen a lot.
Yeah.
And then once you learn like Cuddy's good, strong, like old fashioned values.
That's right.
A man is a man here. No women training in my gym. A woman's a woman. Man's a man.
He did say that.
But come hang out. Rather quickly she came over there.
I know, right?
Could have been days, months, maybe a year they started dating.
No, he still had his cast on, so.
Give him a hook to the body. Body, yada, 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 yada.
Simulation. Do you think Megan Thee Stallion, like...
listens to our show? No.
No, her inspiration for that song was season 4, episode 13, Final Grades.
Yeah, come on. Go upstairs and then download to the body, yada, 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 yada. Good values in my gym.
Anyway, you want to move on to Bodhi and his tragic end at the hands of not Michael.
Yeah, not Michael. Not Mike.
O-Dog, played by Daryl Bird Gibson.
Yeah. So, yeah, man, call back to season 1, episode 3 or something where he wanted to be top dog. But he was one of them little bitches on the chessboard.
That's right.
Finally met his end. I mean... what more can you say? It's like, okay, you know, pretty controversial character.
Yeah.
But even a more controversial person, J.D. Williams.
Yeah. we got love
for him. Hey, like, I do agree with a lot of stuff out there. Like, one of the most underrated actors of his era. Like, you know, I mean, still, I think, he's not, like, super old, but...
Yeah.
Over that time, like, you know, Oz, The Wire, like,
he's
really
also
groundbreaking stuff.
He's also in The Night Of, which I hear is really great.
It is really good.
Okay, I'll check that out. Written by and created by Richard Price.
Johns Hopkins.
Simulation. Richard Price. But some pretty gut-wrenching final scenes for him in this moment where he is finally becoming disillusioned with the whole thing, and he realizes his status in the world as just another like pawn or, you know, cog in the machine. And maybe like, well, I don't know, like, I don't know if he like ever like fully came to grip with like how horrible a thing it was that he did in killing Wallace, because he probably just like always had the faith that he was, you know, doing what he was told to advance and get a promotion. Maybe that like epiphany about how bad that was would come like a few years down the line if he made it out of this situation alive. But like the whole thing he's talking about like how he never messed up a count and like was never, you know, he had perfect attendance, never called in sick or whatever. Like, yeah. Is this just not like as clear an analogy as could be about like how the corporate world in general is a lot similar to this milieu, and that structure itself like minimalizes the value of human life and, you know, their work and stuff?
You make a great case there.
Sorry, I'm trying to bump my final grade, so I'm doing extra credit now.
All right. No, you did your homework for sure. Yeah. I mean, it's all connected, right?
Yeah.
This system of business or corporate America. Yeah. But, you know, a little different job. Like, I'm pretty sure, like, if at my job I punched, like, a cop in the face, like, you know, probably get fired. But
yeah, but that's like in his realm, like, I'm sure he was thinking like, oh, this is gonna like move me up the ladder.
Yeah, it's like a promotion.
People find out that I did this
and I escaped from like little kid jail. Yeah, you know?
Yeah, man.
But you know, what can you say? I mean, it is interesting. Like, McNulty never was like, oh, you did everything you're supposed to do, like the time Stringer told you to kill Wallace, like, I haven't forgotten about that.
But like, he doesn't know that Bodhi did specifically. Right?
But I mean, it could have been a way, like, a time he could have leveraged this, like, hey, man, we could, like, work you out a deal. But why would he do that? Like, Bodhi's pretty much ready to, like, snitch or.
Yeah.
Just, it's a snitch. Like, you know, it's like, you know.
I mean, he would be doing, like, a good thing
for humanity.
Yeah, seriously. Like,
But that is, you know, they consider that, and that's why he has to go.
Yeah. In a lot of situations, don't get me wrong, I'm definitely anti-snitch, but when it comes to, you know, doing anything you can to bring down a murderous criminal organization, I think it's okay to snitch. That's my official stance on this podcast. You could, you know, quote me on it, whatever. I don't care if I'm going to get dragged in some toxic Facebook fan groups.
Damn, dude. I can't believe that. You lost cool points with me. Bodhi not snitching. Nurse at the hospital snitching.
Yeah.
On Cuddy.
Yeah, that's, I'm anti.
She's like dry snitching? Or?
Yeah, I'm anti that kind of snitching for sure.
She's like, ooh, did you know what he did?
Yeah.
But. Yeah, man. I mean, it's interesting also that Chris is kind of trying to give Bodhi a pass, not because he cares for him, but maybe doesn't want Mike getting involved because he thinks Marlo's that like sadistic that he's like, yeah, man, take Mike. Like, he knows him, so it'll be easier to get him, you know? Like, just set him up and use Mike. And Chris is like, how do we know, man?
Yeah, Chris is a psychopathic, cold-blooded killer, but at least he has, like, some small consideration for, like, the fragility of Mike's psyche because they share a bond.
He's like, I mean, that could have been, like, I don't know, his, like, therapist that he got in the car with.
Yeah.
Kind of is, right?
Yeah. Hey, Jakob, you can look me in the eye now.
Okay.
No matter what I've done.
All right. yeah, like, all right. I mean, that was interesting.
Yeah,
because Chris is like as ruthless as it gets. So
yeah,
what else do you make of that scene with McNulty? And it's like pretty sad, right? I mean Bodhi doesn't even know where he's at. It's like, wow, trees, like,
yeah.
Are like, we in Baltimore?
Yeah, I mean, it's like when they're going to Philadelphia in season 2 and he's like fiddling around with the radio and he stumbles on a Prairie Home Companion and he's like, what the like, where's going on? Like, he's so smart within his own environment, but it just like, it's tragic that he didn't get to expand his worldview enough.
Mired in that milieu.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wait. Damn it. Yeah, you know, you could be mired in the milieu or confused to you in the minutiae.
Yeah. But it's on, like, this scene with him and McNulty, it's almost, in some ways, I felt like it was kind of calling back to the opening scene of the series and something that Erland Lavik pointed out in his brilliant video essay, where it's like McNulty was kind of like shocked at some of the proclamations that a witness to Snot Boogie's death was making about like being in America and, you know, the rigid adherence to the rules of like everybody, you know, should get a chance to play the game and whatnot. And by this point, when he's talking to Bodhi and we've seen like everything that he's gone and been through, he like almost has kind of like a sad realization of how much truth Bodhi is speaking.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, man.
Pretty depressing scene for both of them.
True that.
And it's also like, it's fucked up because McNulty was still like doing good at this point, just like being a regular patrolman, and like he was just trying to throw the major crimes unit a bone, but because he inadvertently got Bodhi killed, now he's gonna go down a pretty poisonous, torturous path for himself.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, you know, I get mired in the minutia, but I mean, yeah, you have a very like possible groundbreaking, you know, scenario or like witness here. Wouldn't you want to maybe like be a little more discreet about where you're hanging out, like, and seen together?
Yeah,
I mean, it's a crazy coincidence that, you know, they got bail on a gun charge. Libs, man. Like, I mean, it's like, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
that's all a little corrupt, but
yeah.
Especially like as we like, since we know who was always like a major player in the bail bonds world, like pretty much every like kingpin or something had something to do. Like even our guy at Power Moves, Linwood, was like bail bondsman type dude. So
yeah,
it makes sense that they could get out, but like, you know, maybe meet him around the corner, like like, hey, just meet me at this like fast food spot. And then we'll leave, like, you know, somewhere more quiet.
But Bodhi, like, he doesn't have a phone or anything.
Like, yeah, he's kind of like a Bodhi. Like, you know, he's like the old world gangster. Like, he's like relenting on how like crazy it is out there nowadays. And
yeah,
like there is no more code, even though the code was pretty brutal. Like, kill your young friend.
Yeah. And it's like, kind of like another thing. It's like another parallel or similarity with people talking about how the new way of doing things is so much more intense than the old traditional way. Bunny expresses similar sentiments to Weebay when he's trying to adopt Naaman. Pretty like intense, really well-written scene here in the visiting room where Bunny is making his plea to set Naaman on a different path than his own mother and father.
Yeah. So kind of like rehashing their shared experiences and kind of like what we were talking about with Bodhi, you know, not really people who got out of, you know, the city, even though, you know, took different paths, right? But it's all like small world, and you know, in their environment,
right?
So it's like Bunny was like a beat cop, and you know, yeah. You got some interesting stuff on like Weebay's crew, CBS, you know.
Oh yeah, Calhoun, Baker, Stricker.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I just I found this interesting article from 1994 where they talked about how a girl was murdered at a house party by a rival gang member who was another woman, and she was part of this group calling itself the Girls of White Lock, and the victim was 15 years old, so it's pretty brutal that, you know, a woman that young was already like so deeply involved in murderous warfare and stuff. So that's how you know Weebay is like a true psychopath, if he says he's from Calhoun, Baker, Stricker.
Murderous warfare.
So, I mean,
do you think the Girls of White Lock started to get revenge on like the fish man who killed potentially killed LaTanya Wallace, was it? Like the main red ball of the
homicide.
Yeah, she was like, that guy was on White Lock, right?
So, because Weebay says that he's involved with Calhoun, Baker, Stricker, it's like, oh yeah, no wonder why you like potentially raped a woman at a house party and like made her overdose on drugs and then wrapped her body up in a carpet and dumped her in a dumpster. Like, you've been kind of like bred for this your whole life. But at least it's nice he doesn't want his son to go down that path.
Yeah. In a way, it's like he achieved like the American dream in some sick way, where he provided a better life for his kid in a way, right?
I mean,
it's like really kind of a dark way of looking at it. But I mean, look at the row house that they live in. I mean, I'm sure it's a lot nicer than whatever Weebay had. I mean, I don't want to assume, like, is he one of those like gangster guys that comes from like a pretty, you know, working class, middle class family and then just like goes astray? Or is he like growing up like Mike? You know, you never know. But I'd probably say Mike is more.
Yeah.
Michael's lifestyle is more similar, maybe, but
yeah.
I don't want to assume, but
yeah.
Something definitely went wrong.
Yeah, but like in terms of saying like Weebay, in a way provides for name it.
Well, it's
like tangentially only because he's friends with Cuddy, because Cuddy is the one that gets his life straight and, you know, gives a good character reference to Bunny.
Yeah, like you're the only reason that I even met with you. Yeah, it was a pretty bad analogy.
No, but, I mean, see what you're like, trying to say, though.
You know, it's like an American thing, though. Like, you want your kids to have a better chance at life than you. Whereas, like, maybe not getting too personal, but Europeans can be very like, oh, like, kid, you're like, you're nothing really. I mean, like, do like as good or less than I did. Like, who cares? You know, like, I'm not trying to empower you that much. Or like, that's, you know, like, at least in the, on that continent, like, it's different, like, immigrant mentality.
Right.
But
yeah, I mean,
a little dark, but
yeah. No, but that's a good point you bring up there. But it's just, it's funny because I'm sure at some point Weebay was thinking like, oh, I want my son to, you know, do better than I ever did. I want him to have more corners or more responsibility in a, like a Barksdale organization. But he had to have like Bunny come to him and be like, look, your son is a pussy.
I mean, no. Yeah, but it's also the mess. Like, you could be as hard as canard, but you know, you're still not gonna last long, you know.
Right.
It's just too crazy out there. Like, anything can end it, you know.
Yeah.
What's up with Tater Man though? And them bonding over the corner that he got shot on after coming out of the musical lounge in 1988.
That's a made up statistic though, right? Like, that's
Yeah.
In the articles that have mentioned Tater Man, they mention him terrorizing neighborhoods well into the early to mid 90s.
Yeah, like I couldn't find a story where a Tater Man shot on Division and Gold, but You know, I'm sure like Peanut or other nicknames, there's plenty of Tatermen. So, but Ronald Nance, the guy who terrorized Lafayette Court, is probably not the person that they're referencing.
Yeah.
But interesting article nonetheless that we both like looked at different times. Right. So, but I mean, you know, thanks for refreshing my mind, like memory about it. It's yeah. all David Simon and his like true blue mood. Yeah. Like there's a crisis on our hands. But yeah, anything else about that article that was interesting?
I don't want to get too mired in the minutia, but I just thought it was funny because one of the times I watched this episode was on the DVD with the closed caption, and yeah. it misprinted the, or whoever was doing the CCs for this wrote a vision in gold is oh. Weebane's response. And it's oh. like, damn, that's some fucking poetic ass shit that Weebane's talking about right yeah. now. Like, is he just like, he's saying like, oh, like the stuff that like Bunny is bringing up is like golden to me. Like I cherish all that knowledge. Like, what? Like what was the CC guy thinking of?
Not the Geo, but yeah. that's, damn, what a legendary guy, Tater Man. A vision in gold. Keeps me thinking about a vision in gold. And I'm getting old, Tater Man.
But yeah, pretty optimistic twist of fate that comes about in this instance here, which is rare in the Wire universe. Out of the four boys, Naaman is the one to get out and have a chance at a better life, even as Bunny's greater ambitions are crumbling all around him, as his plan to keep the pilot program going gets totally shitted on by Carcetti's
evil budget team.
Yeah, chief of what is it?
Yeah, you put some respect on his name.
Chief of Staff Michael Steintorf, played by Neil Huff.
Yeah, thanks for letting me know, because I was getting a little out of hand there. It's like guitar guy, evil budget man.
Hey, man, you got to come up with some kind of markers in a show like this where there's 1,000 characters.
I'm like, who the hell did they... Waylon brought a guy on a guitar?
Yeah. But
yeah, what's up, man?
Yeah, but yeah, Bunny is like, when does this shit end? But hey, he like literally turned Naaman from a corner kid into a stoop kid at the end there. So like, there was one small success of the program.
Yeah, but this is clearly tracking, right? And yeah. they want to do it more and more and more throughout the district, like, you know. But you know, they did some good things, yeah. I think. I mean, it is controversial, I guess, but yeah, I don't know.
But I like it's a telling instance, like in the very last scene there, where Naaman sees Donut driving up, you know,
yeah,
ostensibly still being a corner kid or whatever that's supposed to mean. I'm just using Ed Burns' language.
Yeah, yeah, we don't necessarily like, you know, it's depiction versus endorsement.
Yeah,
here there at TGW. NYNSY.
But yeah, pretty clear picture that Naaman's life turned out for the better at the end, largely in part due to Bunny's tutelage. But in terms of the other boys, Randy's pretty dunzo at this part. No, he's pretty like, he's got a bad path ahead of him, even though Carver is trying to step in and be like a good parent or whatever. It's, pretty heart wrenching to see that Carver is growing as a person, but he's, failing as a cop, at least in the, through the, if we're looking at it through the lens, is like, you know. he's doing what a cop should do. Like, he's becoming a better person, but I guess a worse cop in a way, according to Lieutenant Mello.
You can't be both.
Oh, shit.
So, you made an interesting point about McNulty's reaction to Bodhi on the notes and, you know, Mello here.
Just a great way that the creative team of this show kind of like seamlessly like interweave all the narratives that like we hear some rumblings of Lieutenant Mello chewing Carver out about, you know, keeping Randy around instead of just getting sent back to the foster home, as McNulty's discovering the truth about Bodhi. So it's just kind of like, this episode potentially could have been even longer than it, like they could have added 40 more minutes to it if they didn't know how to like so seamlessly interweave multiple narratives. Carver is trying to be a social worker.
Yeah. I mean, you can't be a cop and a social worker, right? Oh, wait, you can. I know you can't. I don't know. Crisis in blue.
But
Mello's a sav, dude. Landsman's like, so what? I'll beat him up too. You get him out of here.
Yeah, you're on the brink of insubordination.
Maybe you could do something about it if your mother ever stopped drinking long enough while you were in utero.
That was so savage when he said that to the cops. It's not complicated. This is terrible. I'm doing a terrible Baltimore accent.
They ever make the joke about Wayne Jenkins and he can't buy the chicken boxes for the cops because now all he gets is jail food.
Oh, man, that's funny.
Randy's screwed, he said, because he has to go to the group home. And the list is the list. Carver is even like, dude, I'll be his foster parent.
Yeah.
But the lady's like, no, sorry. Just because you screwed this up doesn't mean that you can just hop the line or whatever. And Randy sadly is like, was he designing the secret compartment with his textbook?
That's crazy.
Because he's just sleeping in there for a day, a month, weeks. Long enough for insubordination, but he never really says anything. It's like he just kind of resigned to his fate, as opposed to when Naaman was in there like, oh, but there's hope. Like, I get to go to, like, I have options, you know, like Bunny will just take me in. Like, good thing Naaman wasn't on a list or anything, because Bunny's like, all right, I'll adopt you, sure.
Right.
But Randy's screwed, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, $235. That's
yeah.
Is that like a payout, or was that his like hustle money, or what?
It's probably just like all collected from the candy he was selling.
Did he get anything like that, Miss Anna's? No, I mean, he's a minor, so.
Oh yeah. Well, at least he got the first punch in that fight when they scrawled snitch bitch on his bunk and took all the money out of his textbook.
Dude, talking about bunk, that's hella crazy. Miss Anna like got burned hella bad because wasn't bunk burning hella shit in her like back in the day?
Is that just like a crazy bit of foreshadowing from that episode?
I don't know, dude. I don't think so. But.
Yeah,
those guys are huge, man. They look like they're... What are the rules? Like, you know how... I've always wondered that with those like... Where Kennard probably went, you know, but in California they have youth authority. So it's like if you commit a crime or like kill someone when you're super young, you get like a life sentence, but it's really just until you're 25. So I'm looking at some of those kids in the group home, like, what is your deal? Like, are they just really well developed, like 17-year-olds, or are they over 18 but still there?
Yeah. Because
they look way older than like, you know, what do you think a group home?
It's a terrible situation for Randy. Like, is it like they were talking about this in the commentary? Like, the people, like, I guess, like the or caretakers or whatever you can call them, the people that are like showing Randy his bed, like, are they just like so naive that they don't recognize that this is like a dangerous situation for Randy, or are they just like so numb to like the day in and day out reality of it that they're like, okay, he's going to get his ass beat, but the group home is the group home. just like the list is the list.
Yeah, it's maybe like a jail situation. Like, it's basically like a juvenile detention. So they're just like, hey, we'll just like bribe this guy or whatever to look the other way. But I don't know. I feel like, I don't know. I mean, it's Baltimore, so it's way more intense. Like, I mean, obviously we've never had that like kind of experience. Probably the closest thing for me is like making the mistake of booking like the cheapest hostel in a large like European city. And then you just like bring your bags into this room with like 12 other dudes staring at you. And you're like, where the hell am I?
Yeah.
It's like every day you're waking up, there's like some new guy on your bunk, like top bunk, just staring at you. Like,
yeah.
Like, hey, how you doing? It's like, what?
Yeah. Yeah, man. I'm sorry you felt uncomfortable in that situation, but that's probably not comparable to what Randy's gonna do.
A 75-year-old, like gypsy or Syrian immigrant, like putting ointment on his like eczema, the bed like across from you while you're recovering from like a 4-day hangover is not equivalent to Randy getting abused in a group home. No,
tragic stuff.
Yeah, but yeah. Anyways, man.
I mean, it's not like Dookie is faring much better at this point, really.
Yeah, what's up with Dookie? I mean, he, you know, gets promoted, but doesn't ever step inside of Douglas because people are already roasting on his, like, Harry Potter, whatever, peacoat, or at least he got rid of his Erykah Badu hat, as Jermaine Crawford said about him, his own outfit.
Yeah.
But now this might sound stupid, but couldn't Mike or someone just, like, put word out like, hey, just leave this kid alone, like, or are they so far removed in Marlo's world from like petty school drama, you know, that wouldn't make any difference?
I mean it must be able to, because like the Marlo, you know, crime ring or whatever,
the cabal of snitches,
yeah, made its way into the middle school.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. It's like, couldn't they just put out, like, as easy as it is to say, you know, Randy's a snitch, just say, like, hey, this one kid, like, he's not bothering anyone. Just let him, like, do his thing.
I don't think Michael, like, has the, like, capability of, like, recognizing that would be a good thing to do at this point, because he's, like, pretty far gone.
In his milieu.
Yeah. I mean, like, he's not even, like, taking care of Bug. He's, like, having sex.
Oh yeah. Oh. But yeah, I mean, Dookie eventually ends up kind of like
selling drugs
on the corner, right? That so when Bodhi, you know, is like, his fate's determined by Marlo, he's like, hey, give that corner to your pup or whatever after it's done, right?
Yeah.
But then McNulty goes back the day after, the week after, no, and basically jacks up Poot and is like, hey, what happened to your boy? He's like, you know, you did it. You killed him by being seen with him in public. But that's the same corner, right? I mean,
yeah.
So at that point, Mike hadn't taken it over yet, or like, well, I think film location. Or
doesn't he take it over in that scene where we just like see him walking up and killing that guy? Is that the same corner? Or
I'm pretty sure that's Bodhi's corner he gets killed on, right? Or maybe that was a different shooting location, like not like O-Dog shooting, but like film shooting.
I
mean, that's Bodhi's corner, and then Poot's on it, and then eventually I guess Dookie's on it in the last like compilation,
right? Yeah.
So like the it didn't happen that quickly where like the next day it's Mike's corner,
I guess. So,
or
I guess.
It's just like a slip. Or maybe I'm tripping. I don't know. Come on, man. This is what gets me up. Like, big ideas. Like,
no, but I mean, it is crazy that, like, you know, this show, like, hammers home the whole thing about these power structures being cyclical, and, like, how somebody is always, you're always replaceable by someone who can just do the same job. And it's like, it's like extra tragic of the depiction in this season where it's like literally like, you know, early teenagers are getting killed off and getting replaced. I mean, yeah. Bodhi is like probably in his like early 20s by this point, but
it's in
like
his mid 30s. No, it's been years, months. Yeah.
But it's just like it reaches like a whole new level of brutality in this season.
Yeah. Exactly. And also the point I was making or trying to make is that he might be like, oh, Poot ran, or like he should have had Bodhi's back, like, and this and that. But I mean, then he shows up to work the same day, like the next day or a couple days after his like best friend is murdered brutally.
Yeah.
Like to the same corner.
Know, like reliving all that fucking trauma and
like,
shit.
And he's just out there like, all right, you know, I got to be out here. By the way, subscribe to the Dedicated Father series. Trey Chaney.
That's right.
It's great stuff. Hey, not many subscribers away from a milestone of sorts.
I think he reached it. I think he got over 1,000.
Let's go, baby.
Yeah. But yeah, he should definitely be given like an Employee of the Month award for that. Like given some like overtime, given some kind of
like the shoe store was like, can you describe some of your traits? He's like, I'm very punctual. I showed up the day after my best friend was murdered on a corner. You know, like I was there. I was there the very next day.
Jesus Christ. But yeah, like the whole like home situation with Mike and Dookie is just really like fractured and horrible. Like Dookie is taking on the responsibility of taking care of Bug now. Chris and Marlo and Snoop are just popping in whenever they please and are casually talking about like murders in front of like a little child that's gonna like give him lifelong trauma and all that. Like just a pretty terrible outcome that the majority of these boys have had in their lives. It's a crazy that like they all had like some sort of like father figure like trying to reach out to them. Like Duquan mostly had Prez, Randy had Carver, Michael had Cuddy, and then he chose Chris to like be his father figure. And Naaman was the only one who's like guardian like actually like was able to come through.
true. Yeah. Wild stuff, man.
Yeah, man, pretty bleak ending to the show. It's like, you know, hits on a lot of the similar themes that we've seen from the previous seasons, but what like kind of sets it apart, I think, is that like this is the first time that like Marlo's or like the organization wasn't like brought down or like even like really affected in any way by the police work that was going on. Like even in season 2, they just fled the country. Reminder of how brutal this season is that in the ending montage, Carver is busting like the next generation boys of summer, and like
next generation
even just getting younger and younger, that they're like being forced into a life of
generation kill.
Horrible circumstance. Yeah, that's the real generation kill right there. It's a generation kill, like they're killing that generation.
Yeah, murderous warfare on the youth.
Yeah.
The bodies are on Royce, but not the deficit. What do you think about that?
Yeah.
Controversial?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I guess it just seems like it's easier for the constituents or the voters to swallow the narrative that Carchetti would be ripping the schools off, but that, like, it's all Royce's fault that nothing was done about the murders. Like, why do you think that is, that Carchetti can play one thing to his advantage, but the other thing is a serious
Republicans.
I mean, kind of like not to break it down to that, like, you know, simplistic of a read on it, but it is,
that's about all I'm capable of.
But it is like this whole like bullshit thing that like the governor was asking Tommy to hold a press conference, kind of like thanking the governor for what he did, and he didn't want to do it because he's got his eye on the governor's chair in 2 years or whatever. So it is kind of just like Tommy is already yielding to his baser instincts to try and, you know, claim, you know, have an easier path to claim power instead of doing what's right by these kids. Vote Tony Gray, everybody.
Yeah, right? If I learned one thing from rewatching this. Why help the kids now when 2 years from now you could get back at your political arch rival?
Yeah. I mean, but kids don't vote though, so
yeah.
You can't, they're not your constituents.
Who cares? I mean, we care, but you know. So, I mean, last episode we kind of joked about the plague of Robert Elrich, the old former governor.
Yeah.
You know, like who did some pretty savage stuff with Walmart.
Yeah.
Is it Robert or?
Is it Ehrlich or Elrich?
Ehrlich? Elrich? I don't know.
Yeah.
Ehrlich. Okay, there you go. Sorry. No. I mean, now Simon's pretty good at, like, he's making a pretty good case against the Republicans, right? Like, he's like.
Yeah.
Using Carchetti as his vehicle to be like, they want me to beg for it. But is holding a press conference like, you know, what do you think about his response to not taking the money? You know, Norm seems pretty like into it.
About it.
Yeah. So, I mean, is this, you know, like we talked about the long game with Carchetti, but
yeah,
he's a pretty vain guy, right?
Yeah. It's also kind of just like a commentary on, you know, bipartisanship, like not really being a thing that's possible in this country because of how our politics are structured and just the inevitable gridlock that we all run into because of our utter stubbornness to craft any kind of like meaningful solutions to problems, because it's like Royce's chief of staff said while he was commiserating with Norm at the bar, they always disappoint you. Like, leaders are always going to play politics with their lives.
Yeah, the free agent. What was his name? He had like an Italian name?
Coleman Parker, but the actor's name is Cleo Reginald Pisana. Or Pisana.
I got simulated there.
Yeah.
Coleman Pisana.
You got Turtle Well Tater Man.
Yeah.
Bodie Barksdale.
Tater Wells and Turtle Man.
Yeah.
It's not as hot, but it's still damaging my brain.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, man. Like, we kind of already got to the whole bunny thing. So, I mean, he's like ultimately feeling like a liability and then making some pretty good points, like kind of his practical nature.
Yeah.
Just like, hey, well, they're going to study your study. Like,
yeah.
You know, Parenti's on is like, oh, this is fascinating.
Yeah.
It's like I'm in a foreign world. Like,
yeah. That's how you know, like, Parenti and Bunny were never on the same page. Like, we talked about, like, how aggressively he was yelling at the superintendent later or earlier in the season. And now we, like, figure out, like, oh, he's probably been through, you know, bureaucratic hell before. He's like used to it at this point, and he's gonna like see the silver lining and like, oh, this could, you know, turn into a book deal for me, and I could, you know, monetize my experience that way or something.
Yeah, would have been, you know, that's probably like as much I'll trash on him for being that way, like that's who I'd be in the situation. So
yeah,
that's the tough part of analyzing this show from like.
But it's so weird. Like, it's so weird. He doesn't even seem phased at this point.
Yeah.
Like, especially to the extent that Bunny does.
Yeah, it is. It is. Like, he has really no awareness.
Yeah.
He just, like, I don't want to get too into, you know, people are just like in academia their whole life.
Yeah.
Like, that's their world. So.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, it's interesting. I read academic stuff once in a while.
Yeah.
I used to.
There's definitely, value to both of the arguments that they're having, but I feel like
value in his milieu. What else? Anything else? I mean, you watched the you did the commentary, and you watched the doc, like It's Real, or what is it? Sorry,
I can't even remember.
It's like the supplemental, you know, season 4 piece.
Yeah.
Like, anything from there you want to share? Or?
Nah, it's fine. Like, I feel like that would be, because it's not really specifically about this episode. It kind of talks about the show up until flexible. That point.
Get a little fluid.
No, I just thought it was interesting that they were talking to Kurt Schmoke, or they were, the filmmaker of that documentary was interviewing Kurt Schmoke. And at one point he talked about, you know, the real life counter, like the situational real life counterpart of when Clarence Royce implodes Lexington Terrace. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, tears down the projects. And Kurt Schmoke was saying he did something similar, and it like is actually good for the community, and it like brought some, you know, the property values or whatever. But like, it was just kind of ironic to me that he was making that statement in the documentary, and the show kind of makes the exact opposite argument to that whole theory in season 3. Like, am I wrong about that? Like, they imploded those towers and it immediately is like started making all the residents sick with like respiratory like conditions, and like messing up people's asthma and all that.
Okay. You're back to the asthma theory. When you said that earlier, we talked about like this thing, which I was interested in learning more about. I was like, that's really interesting. Like, yeah, it did mess up, like, it messed up things in a lot of ways. And I'm thinking like, you're going to go into like the, like, this is like the corporatist like angle or this. And you're like, the asthma, man, like environmental. Cause you've always like, just, I think that Bubbles getting taken advantage of by the cops and like the asthmatic symptoms of the coroner in Baltimore is like, you're 2 points. You're like, if there's anything I'm going to drive home in these two seasons. Yeah. Like that's
the hill I'm going to die on.
Yeah. I'm thinking like, oh yeah, it like created a power vacuum or like obvious stuff.
But, yeah. All that. But yeah. I was just thinking like the immediate like impact, aftermath, well, like environmental.
And it did screw a lot of people. I wanted to talk about that actually in like way back, you know, season 3, episode 1, where like they were talking kind of offhand aside from like, you know, Poots downstairs situations.
Yeah.
But like, oh, his mom got like placed on the Grove or like Poplar Grove or whatever. But I think I look back and I didn't mention how like I think a lot of people got screwed out of public housing. Like, oh, this is gonna create a market value housing and this and that. And then a lot of people who had been on, you know, like in the public housing system kind of got kicked to the curb, literally. That's awful. They weren't provided, you know, something equal in return. So it kind of was just a way to like, you know, push more people to the margins or like
sweeping leaves on a windy day. Pretty
That's interesting. So, though, and he ruined the police department, Kurt Schmoke, right? he hired a terrible commissioner, they said, right? Crisis in Blue.
I mean, I know what you're referencing, but I feel like I would need to know. Like,
take the bait.
I need to do like more research to have like a fully formed opinion about Kurt Schmoke's tenure as mayor.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm being like facetious or whatever, but I mean, you know, it's always fun to learn about like David Simon, like young... And now we learn about young Simon, a.k.a. Fenton. Trying to get his young Simon. This is it. He's like, he just wrote his homicide. You know, this is it.
Pretty much. Exactly.
So we need to stop thinking about like in terms of like, oh, like one day we'll hook up with Burns and Simon and this and that. Like we need to start like Justin Fenton. Where you at?
Yeah. We need to
Have I trashed on that?
Looking more white guys doing the propaganda.
No. I need to do more research to have a full opinion on that. Fully formed.
All right, we're at hour and 23. You want to cut Woo. It?
Damn, we just went over 5 minutes. cut it up, man.
For sure. All right, you're good?
Yeah.
All right, thank you for listening, everybody. We're really appreciative to you. As always, you can find us on all the social media platforms. We're at The Gods Will Not Save You on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Yeah, and please also reach out via email, thegodswillnotsaveyou@gmail.com, if that's your preferred method of communication.
Yep. Also want to give a shout out to Mostart, the incredible musician who did our intro and outro music and a couple of our bumpers. You could check out his whole catalog and upcoming performances at mostart.com.
Yeah, and also big thanks to Andre, who provided us some original artwork of his for our emblem. So, amazing stuff.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks. Talk to you next season.
Thanks.